call to order the meeting of the Oceanic Community Service District Board of Directors, regular session, Wednesday, September 13th, 5:30 p.m. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Bernay?
Here.
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Colwell?
Here.
Vice President Austin?
Here.
President White?
Here. We all stand for the flag salute.
Ready, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Move on to closed session. We have two items tonight. Oh, agenda review. Oh, God, I already screwed up. Okay. Yes, call for the agenda review. Any changes?
President White, members of the board, we have modified our recommendations on agenda item 8B. We have provided the modified staff report with the item that has been added to the disbursements. We are adding a payment for $168 to the SLO County Bar Association for the Fair Political Practices Commission lunch on September 21st at the Madonna Inn. The adjustment will increase the total cash disbursements from $293,866.22 to $294,034.22. And at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for approval of staff recommendations in 8B as modified.
Thank you. Anything else? We got a motion?
I move we approve the agenda as amended.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Zero. Moves 5-0. Now we'll move on to closed session. We have two items. Attorney Minery, would you please do the honors?
Seeing that there's no public comment?
Yes.
Okay. Then the board will adjourn to closed session. We have two items, 5A and 5B. 5A, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D2, conference with district council regarding anticipated litigation. There are two matters. Closed session item 5B, real property negotiation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. This is conference with the real property negotiations regarding 1687 Front Street.
Thank you.
And yes. Madam President, we just had a member of the public show up in the event that he may have wanted to comment on closed session items.
Would you like to speak? We'll open public comment and closed session items. Okay. Thank you. Adjourn to closed session. Santa Barbara teachers, or do you want CHC? Call the meeting back to order. It's 6:07. Mr. Minery, would you please give us a report from closed session?
Yes, the report out of closed session on item 5A and 5B is that the board took no reportable action.
Thank you very much. I now would call for public comment on items that are not in the agenda. Public comment period provides the opportunity for members of the public to address the board on matters of interest within the jurisdiction of the district that are not listed in the agenda. If a member of the public wishes to speak at this time, public comment is limited to 3 minutes. So I'd call anybody who would like to speak on items not on the agenda. Seeing nobody come forward, We'll move on to special presentations and reports. Mr. Maraschino, if you would please come up.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino. Just to give you an update, Lopez this month is going to be shutting down between the 18th and 21st. And during that time frame, just like last month, they're going to deliver state water. All right. So far, Lopez is currently at 57.1%, which is 28,194 acre feet. We had no SSOs, sewer system overflows, for the month of August. No state water. We're not taking any this year. Everything's on paper. Currently have been delivered 333 acre feet, and we have pumped 20 acre feet due to the fact that Lopez was down for a few weeks. And so the 20 acre feet is majority from last month. All right. So we had our daily rounds, samples, 10 work orders, 8 USAs, 9 customer service calls. We had 3 after-hour call-outs. One was a power failure at the yard. It kind of glitched real quick during the high winds and thunderstorm that we had. Another one was an apartment complex on McCarthy. Somebody had kicked a sprinkler head, and there was no shut-off for it, so we had to go out there and shut it off for them until they got a plumber to fix it. And the other call-out was after-hours unlocks. Once we had lock-offs this past week, so there was 3 of them that were after-hour unlocks. Continued sewer jetting. Sewer jetting should be done. We're about a half a mile shy of our 15 miles for the year. We had an install through 1376 21st Street of a 1-inch meter, because they're going to be upgrading their property, adding a second unit. Continued replacing meters, first of the month equipment runs, as I said, lock-offs and door hangers, 117. Any questions?
Any questions, board members? I have one kind of frivolous one. I wondered, the days of those terrible hot spells, if you took any note of how much the water consumption increased. I was just curious. If you didn't do it, don't look it up.
No, it drastically increased, because I'm having a hard time figuring out what Oceano's doing right now, because they have cut back since the heat. And we're filling, even though we're about 100 gallons a minute less, bringing in. Mm-hmm. We're filling our tanks.
So
they were consuming quite a bit.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact total for the month that we... I didn't do the delivery and pump. I guarantee it was over 50 acre feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just curious. I would assume that everybody was just going, oh,
yes,
water.
Yeah. It was definitely more than the previous months.
Yeah.
Because we were pumping quite a bit.
Yeah. And no problems.
No problems whatsoever. We worked out all the kinks. You know, it's been a while since we had a pump. So the analyzers, everything, all the rubber tubings and everything, we had to replace, rebuild them, and you know, because the chlorine that did set in there for months on end just rotted everything out. It's just normal preventive maintenance when you do run the wells.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Tony, I did have one question. Did you say 330 acre feet so far this year for Lopez?
So we've been delivered, yes, 333 acre feet.
Okay.
And we have pumped just over 20 acre feet, and that was due to the fact of last month's Lopez and state water shutdown.
Okay.
Because Lopez was down for a few weeks.
Right.
Quick clarification. On the 300-plus from Lopez, is that since January 1st or April 1st?
This is since April.
April 1st.
April 1st. It's the water year. Lopez.
Yeah. Is that surplus water or is that our allocation? Or both?
Half yes and half no. So our annual allocation is 303 acre feet. And so part of it's annual allocation, but not surplus water. It's the carryover water from operating during the low reservoir response plan. And that's noteworthy because just recently the Board of Supervisors formalized the extension of the LRRP. They took tentative action a few months ago and directed county staff to come back so they could take the formal action on extending the LRRP consistent with Zone 3 Advisory Committee's recommendations. So that was all finalized. And so we're going to continue to essentially, we've burned up all of our entitlement water already this year, and we'll continue to utilize the water that we had in storage during the drought, and we can continue to utilize that through March 31st of next year. So that's all good news.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and then by then we'll know what the next water year looks like.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Chief Lieberman is not here, and we have not had a fire meeting, and we haven't had any major fires that I know about. In a couple of cases, our Five Cities Fire Authority crews were sent to various locations. They went up to Santa Margarita the other day because with everything throughout the state, fire resources are very, very short, tight, in use. And so they're relying on local firefighters to jump onto anything they can, whether they're serving the Forest Service, the state, the county. It's all one big effort to keep California from burning completely apart this summer. Thank you. Mr. Ogren?
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, a few items that I wanted to provide quick updates on. One is I went to the State Water Subcontractors meeting today. And the new news is a different approach from DWR and the state with respect to the Bay Delta and the California water fix. So obviously it's been talked about for several years, what's going to happen up in the Bay in order to address the environmental issues as well as maintain reliabilities associated with state water supply. And so it had been called the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which included the tunnels in order to convey state water into the canals and reduce the pumping from the Delta, as well as a lot of environmental efforts. Those two efforts have been split now into two different projects. And so the California water fix is mostly focused on state water and the tunnel project. Over the last several years, the Department of Water Resources had been taking the position that state water contractors could elect to participate in the tunnels if they wanted a higher level of reliability, or they could choose not to participate in the tunnels if they didn't want that higher level of reliability. So the new news is DWR has now changed their position and said everybody has to participate. And the idea is the bypass facilities around the Delta or through the Delta are in the original contracts. And so DWR is saying, hey, it's part of the original contracts, and therefore everybody's obligated. That's the quick reminder that the state water project as originally approved in the early 1960s has never been fully constructed. So DWR switched the position. That may have implications as we go down the road. And the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, which has entitlement or allocations to about 50% of the state water project, is taking up hearings on it in the very near future. And so I learned about that today at the state water subcontractors meeting, and we're going to get links on both Metropolitan's efforts, since you know they are leaders in a lot of these things, and I can report back then on these details at the appropriate time and what the implications might be at a subsequent meeting. There's no immediate actions for anything, but again, there's been a big shift on how the Department of Water Resources is choosing to pursue the implementation of the tunnel projects. And they have certified their environmental EIR, and because the 30-day period to file litigation has expired, well, there has been a lot of litigation filed on it. So, again, big shift. And I'll provide more details as I learn them, and it'll be a good discussion at a future board meeting. Two other items real quick. We did issue the purchase order to RRM for site planning at the utilities yard, and we're meeting with them tomorrow in order to initiate that work effort. And we also issued the purchase order to Gary Wilson, professional engineer, the electrical engineer, to help evaluate the different alternatives that we came up with for the emergency generator. And as a quick reminder, Gary had also put on the table the idea of simply using battery backup. And with Tesla's evolution in their batteries, that will be on the table. And he's going to be doing his work during the week of September 25th. So Monday, September 25th is when we're going to meet with him. And he figures he'll have it all done by the end of that week. So we should be able to review it at your board's October 13th meeting. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go down the table, starting with Director Brene. Surprise.
Surprise. I have not attended any committee meetings. I want to thank Mr. Ogren for covering for me, as my work schedule was not conducive for me to attend. So I appreciate you following up with statewide.
Yeah. I'm just... Never mind.
I think they're going to listen.
Director Angelo?
I have nothing to report. I had no meetings.
President White? I didn't attend any meetings. Vice President?
Yes, I attended the last September 6th South County Sanitation District meeting. And there wasn't a whole lot of... big items on the agenda. We still have our Rick Sweet and Paul Karp are working together and getting things in order and everything. The plant's running very smoothly. Everything's working well. We do have our next meeting on September 20th. We will be receiving the findings from the attorneys about the joint investigation that was done with the city of Arroyo Grande on the... that was done at the request of the... We joined the city of Arroyo Grande at their request to participate in an independent joint investigation of misconduct, alleged misconduct by the mayor of Arroyo Grande. So we will be... the city of Arroyo Grande received that last night, and we'll be receiving it on the 20th. And let's see what else went on. Also, there was a lot of... public comment regarding the investigation, and one of the members of the public presented a petition that she had passed around. It was circulated, and the title was Vote of No Confidence Petition for Chairperson John Scholes and Board Member Linda Austin at the Sanitation District, because they feel that we're not acting in the the best interest, or our lack of action, which I can say that the lack of action is a lot of things that go on there. The problems they're having are things that are in closed session, so we can't come out and discuss those things. So they think because we're not telling everything that we're not doing anything, and I want everyone to know that I am working very hard at that sanitation district to keep things going well. And the petition, that's made it like it was this ratepayers in this whole area are very upset, and they're very distraught over our Scholes, John Scholes, and my actions. So this big petition had 65 signatures, and 5 people from Oceano signed it. So I don't know what the point they're trying to make with the petition, because... I'm representing Oceano when I'm sitting on the board, so I'm not the individual that is being investigated now. So, and it didn't start with us; it started with the city. So, anyway, there's 5 people in Oceano that don't support me, but I can tell you that more than 5 didn't vote for me last November. So, I think things are looking pretty good for And I just want to let everyone know that anybody has any questions, I'm very easily accessible. I mean, all these people have found me at my work. So anybody can come talk to me anytime if they have any questions about my participation at the sanitation district, because I'm doing the best job I can for this community, for that sanitation district. the concerns they have are legal and financial jeopardy, and that's what I'm trying to keep it out of. And so I'm just, that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Director Coldwell?
I didn't attend any committee meetings outside of the board. Again, Mr. Ogren covered for me and reported earlier this evening better than I ever could have, so we're grateful.
But you survived the safari.
Yes. It was an amazing journey back. Our first flight leaving Africa was Sunday morning, and we got back this morning, so the last few days have been exhausting.
Wow. Wow, so you've been on the road all this time?
Yeah, since Sunday.
Wow. You're going to need some rest. You just got home today?
I'm going to take a nap in about 15 minutes.
As soon as I start talking.
We will let you.
I need to call for public comments on special presentations and reports. Seeing nobody come forward, we move on to the consent agenda.
Madam President, I will have to recuse myself on item C, as my husband and I own the property next door to 1350 16th Street. And you're...
I have to recuse myself, too.
She's across the street.
Okay, and then I wonder if we also want to pull off Mr. Santana's thing for discussion, being he's present.
What I would do is suggest that Mr. Santana can provide public comment, certainly. Mm-hmm. If your board has any concerns about that particular item, then pull it off for separate consideration. If there's no concerns that are expressed, then it can be approved along with the entire consent agenda. And for the two board members who are recusing themselves from the one item, you've noted it, so you can still vote on the consent agenda as a whole. And then the minutes will reflect that you've recused yourselves on those that specific item.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your guidance on that. Then I would call for a public comment, and I think Mr. Santana can come forward
if he'd like to.
If he wants to say anything. Okay. Okay.
Somebody make a move to approve, or is that what we're ready to approve?
If nobody has any questions or comments, I might add that I believe Ms. Austin and I both saw this Santana plans at the Oceano Advisory Committee at that time. Remember?
A long time ago. Yeah.
That we did see them. I didn't have much question at that time. So, anyway, just as a point of order. So, anybody want to make a motion?
Well, I'll make a motion that we. Well, I guess maybe I should make the motion. Is that all right?
I'll make the motion that we approve the consent agenda. With the addition that item 8B is as revised.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. That took care of that.
That's it.
Pardon me? Yeah, everybody voted yes on... Yeah.
Everybody
welcome.
Voted yes.
Good luck.
And they didn't vote on one of the four.
Right. So, Madam President, if I might just real quick before we move to the next agenda item, in your reference to OAC's Oceano Advisory Committee's review of development plans, just for the listening audience's benefit, the distinction in responsibilities, because OAC is an advisory body to the Board of Supervisors, is focusing on the land use proposal. In contrast, when these are in front of your board as the Oceano Community Services District, it's purely with respect to whether water and sewer services are available.
Okay. Yeah, I was just making a point that we had seen them before. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
Sorry, to clarify, it was 8C or 8D?
8C.
8C.
Thank you. Yeah, not 8D, 8C. Okay.
Got that F.
Hmm? Yeah, it passed 5-0. Yeah, we're just taking a second here.
Bandaranga's place.
Yeah, I know what that it is. I was thinking we were on a different subject.
Yeah, so the one item will reflect that it was passed 3-0.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Moving on to business items. Public comment. Members of the public wishing to comment are invited to come forward. I don't see anybody coming forward, so we will move on to 9A, consideration of a recommendation to approve a professional service agreement with GSI Water Solutions, Inc., to prepare the 2017 annual report for the Northern Cities Management Area in the amount of $35,789 plus contingencies of $3,161 for a total contract amount of $38,950. And I believe, Mr. Ogren, you're up.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board. So on the recommended approval of the GSI Water Solutions contract, that's the work effort that is mandated as part of the stipulations in the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin litigation, and of which Oceano pays approximately 21%, with Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and Pismo Beach paying the other 79%. The contract that's in front of you today is consistent with the contracts in prior years. It's an overall increase of about 3%, and in some respects, this is almost becoming a consent agenda item. The idea that it's still a significant dollar amount, so I wanted to make sure to put it on a business item in case board members had any questions. And my only other comment is that the coordination between GSI on behalf of the Northern Cities Management Area and the individuals who represent the Napomo Mesa Management Area have improved in terms of the technical review and some coordination. I still am generally of the opinion that we have a lot of room for improvement in our efforts with the Mesa, but at least there's a positive thread there of improved coordination between the technical experts. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
It just seems that these costs are awful high. I don't know if that's just me or anyone else. It just seems high.
Yeah. And it's going up 3% every year, and yet they have all the background and all the data and all the information, so it seems like it would be less expensive.
So incorporated in this, they do a lot of the groundwater monitoring as well.
Okay.
So we have to get out there. They do well readings. We have to produce information with them. There's a lot of different components. There's we do water quality testing as well. Obviously, with the drought and the changes in the groundwater levels, they're having to do some real careful data compilation and trying to see what our trend lines are. So, you know, efforts and tasks that are associated with litigation are, you know, often expensive because the report has to be produced in a manner that is then submitted to the judge. And so they do have a lot of detailed review that they have to do with it. As a little reminder, we did go out with a new RFP last year, and so they were subject to the competitiveness of proposals last year. That proposal provided GSI with a 5-year window then to do the work. And no other firms, we advertised multiple firms, but they were the only one who responded, which is a little bit of an indication that from a cost perspective, other firms really didn't see, you know, that there was much cost savings associated with what they might be able to do. So it's certainly not inexpensive. It's a lot of work associated with it. And my last reminder is that the concurrent work that Water Systems Consultants does is staff extension work for Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, and Arroyo Grande. is something that the cities are paying for that we simply aren't paying for. We don't see quite the need. So we are saving on that side of the equation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Do we have a motion?
Well, I move that we approve the professional services agreement with GSI Water Solutions.
Second.
It's moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carries 5-0. Item 9B, consideration of a recommendation to approve a utilities agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo in conjunction with the county's Airport Park Bridge Replacement Project, approve a budget adjustment and payments in the amount of $111,000, authorizing the general manager to file a notice of exemption pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act and provide direction on alternative bidding procedures. Mr. Ogren.
Madam President, members of the board, the recommendations on the utility relocations associated with the county's Air Park Drive Bridge replacement project are consistent with the recommendations that were approved earlier this year for the Highway 1 drainage project. And it's where when we have facilities within a county road where they have the priority on the road, which is the vast majority of situations, then our pipes are really in the road based on county approval, and the county can mandate us to relocate when they're doing a project, which is essentially what they're doing. The specific strategy in this one is a little bit different than Highway 1 drainage, and that is that in the bridge replacement project, the temporary relocation of the sewer pipeline, which is necessary because it's the force main from our pumping station in Pier Avenue to go out to the treatment plant, we have no choice. That obviously needs to work during the construction period. And the county's contractor has to control the site. So one of the things that they're going to need to do is they have to dewater the lagoon in that area, which is going to be a significant effort. And they have to set up, I think, what we call coffer dams, but they're basically temporary dams, and then they got to pump a lot in order to make sure that the contractor can work in the area and demolish the existing bridge and put up the new bridge. And so they have to do, the county's contractor has to do that temporary relocation of the sewer lines because you can't have the two contractors in that same work area, and if something goes wrong, our contractor could create a delay for the county's contractor. So that component of the work is an absolute incorporated into the county's work. The water line, the intent is to dead-end it prior to their construction so that all properties will be served. The line simply won't be looped, so we don't have any temporary relocation lines on the water cost. Then once the county completes the bridge project, if their bids come in well enough, then their contractor would do our permanent work. Alternatively, if our bids are better, then we will have a four-week window after they've completed the bridge project, but before they do the repaving of the roads. Essentially, everything will be graded out, and then we'll have a four-week window to go in there and pull our lines. The underside of the bridges have portals or holes where you can put the utility lines and everything. So we'll have a four-week window to get in there and put in our permanent water line and our permanent wastewater line, and 4 weeks is more than sufficient to do that work. So consistent with the Highway 1 drainage project, we'll have options on how the work gets done. But again, the temporary relocation work from the sewer line has to be part of the county contract. And we're hopeful the actual cost will come in less. There's some reason to believe that, but overall, I'm hearing from a number of agencies that we're seeing contractor bids coming up right now. Everybody's getting pretty busy, so we are a little bit concerned about bid escalation. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Do we have lines on the bridge, don't we? Isn't there?
Yeah, so right now they hang underneath the bridge.
So how are they going to be done?
So like right now they're probably strapped, right. And when you build concrete bridges, in the understorage, in the concrete cross members, if you will, they put in holes in there so that our pipes can go in there, and they still need to firm them up. But, yeah, they'll go on the underside of the bridge.
We don't have to pay for the holes?
No. And we don't have to pay for the demo work either, because there's no way that, we're going to cap our water lines, but in terms of their contractor going, when they demolish the bridge, they'll be demolishing our water and sewer lines. And there's really no way the county can segregate those costs, because, a couple pipes are just going to be, lost in the overall demolition of the bridge. So,
do we have a start date yet? Next summer?
Yeah, it won't be before the end of the rainy season. I believe that they're going to go out to bid in around December, looking to start construction. On any bridge work, they try to start construction as soon as they can get in and start working on the creeks. And typically that's April 15th. So they'll time it to try to get that contractor working as fast as possible, because the hope is always to be able to get work done so that you're not in the creeks in the wintertime. So, get all that stuff done by October 15th, which includes trying to get the deck on the bridge. So you want to be out of the creek before October 15th, so you got to be in it as fast as possible, and that's usually around April 15th.
We're exempt from CEQA because the county's already done that.
The county has, but the nature of our work... Okay, so the county has to cover all the CEQA and the other permitting issues associated with the project as a whole. If we end up awarding contracts separately for the permanent relocation work, then we need to make sure to do CEQA findings. Even on the county's work, we have a responsible agency, but not a lead agency responsibility.
Okay.
But the... exemptions underneath the California Environmental Quality Act are the details that I work on with legal counsel, is to identify the specific reasons why we're exempt. And what we normally do is we'll find several reasons why we're exempt, like existing facilities technically you don't have to file a notice if you're exempt. But the benefit of filing it is that there's still the 30-day period that somebody could come in and disagree. If you don't file, the 30-day period never starts. And you could be done with your work, and then they challenge the fact that you said you were exempt. So we want to always file when we are exempt, just to trigger that 30-day period. And we don't envision any challenges associated with it, but it's a good procedural step to take. And the filing costs $50, so... it's definitely worth it.
Okay, thank you.
I did have a question. I see up in the subject it's 110, and then below it's 115,000. Is it 115?
It's 115. Yeah. Okay. So in the subject matter, that 110 was an error. The specific recommendation, 46,000 relating to the water fund and 69,000. Relating to the sewer fund.
Okay.
Do we have a motion?
I will go ahead and make a motion that we approve a utility agreement with the County of San Luis Obispo in conjunction with the county's Airport Drive Bridge Replacement Project, approve a budget adjustment and payments in the amount of $115,000, authorize the general manager to file a notice of exemption pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, and provide direction on alternative bidding procedures.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. 9C, review the county's 1915-1919 consolidated plan and the Little Hoover Commission report on special districts with staff direction as your board may deem appropriate.
Can I ask how they got the name the Little Hoover report?
I have learned a little bit more, Madam President, members of the board. I wanted to the purpose of this agenda item is for some general discussions and to reflect a little bit about what others are, how they approach special districts in Oceano. And so the Little Hoover report is in here, and there's some specific items to address there. And then the county's 2015-2019 consolidated plan is in there, and that really addresses the county's allocation of community development block grants. And there is a relationship between the two. That relationship is so the question of how did they get the Little Hoover Commission report? So Little Hoover Commission was first established in 1962. And
just where did they get the name Hoover?
You know, so I don't know, but prior, you know, in the 50s and stuff, like they had the Hoover report, like Herbert Hoover and some of that stuff.
That's
at the federal level. And I'm curious, yeah, if it might have been sort of a play on that. But
wasn't there an institute or something, Hoover Institute,
Hoover.
Research
like
think tank?
Yeah, it probably, yeah, it was, but 1962, I don't remember 1962 very well.
I don't either, for different reasons.
I was starting my life. I hadn't quite gotten out of the womb yet in April, but come around October, I was breathing and screaming and everything else like that. So that's all I know about 1962 and the Little Hoover. There's some really good points out of the Little Hoover report, and there's a lot of people associated with special districts who were really kind of worried about it because the perception was that the Little Hoover report might do an attack on special districts. And that was because the prior Little Hoover report certainly was a little bit more aggressive about special districts and this issue of whether they're needed or not, because the general statewide perception is that the local control associated with special districts costs people more money. And the idea is, I think that there's some reason to believe that that's true, that these special districts, for example, when they're under the operations of the county, there's some economies of scale. The other side of the story, though, is with local special districts and the local control, there's more responsiveness to communities and community issues, and certainly here in Oceano, we've got a list of items where we don't believe that the county is as responsive as we would like them to be. And that doesn't that's not just San Luis Obispo County, but as you can imagine, it actually exists throughout the state. So there's a quote that I especially liked, and I know that I put it in here. And it was talking, it is the state's 482 cities and 58 counties that all attract all the media and social media attention with their noisy, divisive issues and controversial political campaigning. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen a little bit of that locally. And the quote goes on, but it is quiet below the radar special districts where most of the grunt work and local governing of California gets done.
Yes.
And so a lot of the, you know, the Special Districts Association very much liked the outcome of this Little Hoover Commission report because they felt like it was fair-handed in recognizing, you know, the hard work that special districts really do and the responsiveness to the local communities. There's a number of recommendations that are included in there. There is a whole section on climate change, and I didn't really draw that out in the board letter at all because for us, I'm not seeing how that actions, how it's real applicable to us. At the Sand District, for example, they are addressing that through the permitting processes and potential sea level rise changes and stuff like that. But to me, the climate change recommendations were really focused on other districts or the large special districts. And instead, I focused in and I highlighted a number of sections in the report that I thought were more relevant. But in this, and I brought them out in the staff group. So the legislature should require, this is one of the recommendations, every special district to have a published policy for reserve funds, including the size and purpose of reserves and how they are invested. Now, working backwards, how they are invested is already covered by government code. And during the quarterly budget reports, we will start beginning to provide you with an update on the investments, the cash held in every investment, even if it's a checking account, and the additions and withdrawals to that. So that's already actually, how they are invested is already covered in the government code, and your board already has a policy on investments. which will probably be recommending some changes to that in the near future. But in any case, that's already covered. So, but the idea to have a published policy for reserve funds, and we've been talking about that over the last couple years, and I've identified that as a need, focusing on a few other priorities in the meanwhile. And so in the next two-year budget cycle, which will come to your board this spring, yeah, I think that that's the time will be to start having some defined reserve policies. Again, thought that that was a really good recommendation coming out of this Hoover Commission.
Yeah.
The next one is that the State Comptroller's Office should standardize definitions of special district financial reserves for state reporting purposes. A little bit of the feedback is that some people think that that's already incorporated into our state reporting, but obviously if the State Comptroller's Office provides some additional guidance, then that would be great. The legislature should require every special district to have a website. Well, the good news is not just that we have a website, but that we're upgrading it. Your board's approved the upgrade, and the individual who's working on our website has essentially got the design done, and we're going to be looking at doing the data migration in the very near future now. So good progress on the website. The other recommendation, another one that I thought was good out of the Little Hoover, was California Special Districts Association, working with experts in public outreach and engagement, should develop best practices for special districts' outreach to public on opportunities to serve on boards. So I think that that's a good recommendation. We'll see if what the California Special Districts Association might come up with. But in some of our existing grants, we have public outreach that we're going to be doing. At the last meeting, your board approved the agreement with One Cool Earth, or approved developing an agreement with One Cool Earth to work with Oceano Elementary School, which is another approach to public outreach. And again, I think it's a noteworthy recommendation. And if the Special Districts Association comes up with guidelines, that's always beneficial, because then it reduces the amount of staff work that we need to do in order, you know, it's always best not to reinvent the wheel if we don't have to. And then, as I mentioned, there were some various recommendations relating to climate change. So, you know, the summary on the Little Hoover report is that we felt a lot of people who work with special districts feel like it was a balanced report, recognizing the important services that come out of special districts. Overall, there's 90,000 local government workers, and special districts have about a $21 billion contribution to the economy every year, or that's, you know, what its component is, and certainly $21 billion is pretty significant. The other thing that's sort of embedded in the report is this discussion that Little Hoover has, and this is the tie-in to community development block grants and the county's 2015-2019 consolidated plan. And what the Little Hoover Commission report discusses a little bit is property tax inequities. And so we all know that when Proposition 13 was passed, then Assembly Bill 8 was passed right after that, that determined how property taxes were allocated between the counties and the cities and special districts and schools. And the Little Hoover Commission identifies that some special districts use those property taxes in order to subsidize their enterprise activities like water and sewer. And they point to, they think that that's a little bit of an inequity, because enterprise funds should be self-sufficient and those property taxes should go for other purposes other than like water and sewer bills. Well, here in Oceano, that's exactly what does happen, is that the property taxes do not subsidize water or sewer, and they go 100% to fire services, Five Cities Fire Authority, and lighting, with the vast majority of it going to Five Cities Fire Authority and a tiny bit going to lighting. So our practice is consistent with the Little Hoover Commission's recommendations on property taxes. And a lot of special districts have essentially had to do that by default anyhow, that whatever property taxes they have coming in, If they're originally going into helping with water fund operations, a lot of special districts have said we can't afford to do that because we still need to meet needs of especially like fire services. And we know that the fire services and that prior to Prop 13, Oceano is a perfect example where it was a volunteer fire department. And today, the public's expectations of emergency services is a lot greater than volunteer fire departments in many areas. And so, you know, it's whether it's EMT training or in what Director White, something like 80% or 70 to 80% of the calls are medical calls. They're not fire calls. So we've seen a significant increase in the services that our fire departments are providing to communities. And as a result, a lot of special districts have had to move any property taxes that had been previously allocated to water funds or sewer funds and moved them to help support fire operations. And so we're similar there. Now, I differ from the opinion of the Little Hoover Commission in one respect where they say these enterprise funds should be self-sufficient and should get no property tax revenues. And what that doesn't really consider is the cost that the existing customers pay for a water service, which really helps to accommodate future development. And so prior to passage of Proposition 13, governing boards such as yourself would make the discretionary decision that says, look, the undeveloped property should pay something because the pipes are in the ground and those undeveloped properties have the benefit of everybody else paying for the installation of the pipes so that it's there and available when a property owner wants to develop. And that was a historical rationale for some governing boards such as yourself to say, hey, we need to have a component of property taxes to help fund our water system because undeveloped properties really do get a benefit from the availability. And today in a post-Prop 13 environment, the ability to charge undeveloped properties is very challenging. It requires the homeowner approvals. And we talked about that a little bit at a prior meeting in terms of availability assessments and what are we going to do to help develop the funding for a deferred infrastructure. But in any case, that's kind of a minor point. And the overall idea that property taxes need to be focused on non-enterprise activities like fire or police, and we don't have police power here in Oceano, but those types of general governmental services and that enterprise funds need to be self-sufficient with user charges is a pretty strong policy sentiment throughout California. Now, how that ties into the county's consolidated plan is simply that community development block grant money. Historically, there was a significant amount that had been allocated to special districts. Water storage tanks in Shandon, wastewater plant upgrades in San Miguel. Really, it was kind of a thing where the CDBG money, there was almost a rotation where money would be funded in one portion of the county to help with special district infrastructure and then to another portion. Because the unincorporated communities in the county, unincorporated communities everywhere, we don't get sales tax, right? The county gets the sales tax. So we don't get some of this funding that the cities get that they can utilize to help with the challenges that they face. So historically, there was or has been a significant amount of money that was allocated to special districts, independent special districts from the county, and I don't see that happening anymore. And so part of it, I'm speculating that it's this sentiment that enterprise funds need to be, just make their own way. But in the 2015-2019 report, the county's pretty explicit that that other funds should be used in order to cover those types of infrastructure. Now, they even point to the county's general fund to help cover those costs. And independent special districts just don't get county general fund money. So what they're really talking about is county projects. And maybe general fund money should be used to fund county projects a little bit more. But this document kind of, you know, carves out special districts and says you're not the priority for us anymore. The allocation in the 2017 plan, no money went to special districts for infrastructure projects. It all went to a variety of needs associated with the homeless, and certainly we understand that there are needs there. The other contrast, though, is that there was the reallocation. So we had applied the last couple years for some funding for our Highway 1, the mandated costs from the county. And in April, not through the 2017 allocation, but from a reallocation of prior years, County Public Works got another $100,000 for the Highway 113th project. So they've awarded themselves over $700,000 for the from CDBG for their Highway 113th Street drainage project, and have awarded the local agency, i.e. Oceano CSD, zero. We're seeing this shift, and so there's a consistency where the little Hoover Commission is saying, look, enterprise funds simply just need to fund their own way, and they see it as a property tax inequity in one direction, and then we're seeing through the county's consolidated plan and community development block grant money that the county is basically saying the same thing, that if you're an enterprise fund associated with an independent special district, don't count on any funding from us anymore. That they're reestablishing the priorities. The frustration is that, in meanwhile, they're funding some of their own projects. And in any case, there's, I guess, a bit of the writing on the wall that we see with these two different documents. And the real question is, you know, am I going to try to apply for CDBG money again? And without any, you know, strong support at the elected level at the county, I'm not seeing the ability to do it. So I think we, Board Member Austin, Vice President Austin and I might have some discussions, and President, White and the three of us might have some discussions with our District 4 representative to see whether or not we've really got a shot at any of this in the future. And if not, then I don't think it would be worth it to send the applications in anymore. So I wanted to make sure to sort of highlight these two reports so that we could understand where we're seeing the pressures and sort of the politics associated with some of these funding sources and bring it to your board's attention. And be glad to answer any questions or to dialogue some more on this topic.
Anybody else got anything? I have a couple of, well, first of all, I thought that the climate change part of the Little Hoover Commission did talk to us, speak to us. It said the urgency of climate change adaptation in California and the frontline roles that special districts, particularly water, wastewater treatment, and flood control districts play is in preparing their communities and defending them from harm. And then it went on to talk about two things. Well, the most important one that I saw was recommendation 20. Special districts should lead efforts to seek and form regional partnerships to maximize climate adaptation resources and benefits. And certainly recycled, reclaimed water, that's exactly what we're doing with all of the other entities surrounding us, and I thought that's kind of something we are already fulfilling what they're recommending.
And yes, I agree. My distinction is that we specifically are not implementing the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, that's being implemented via the City of Pismo Beach and South County Sanitation District. So I agree with the validity of your statements from a policy perspective, but we won't have specific board actions on those particular projects. But the wastewater treatment is a significant, and then of course flood control is significant, and those are under the jurisdiction of the county, because literally, other than storage tanks and a lift station, the vast majority of our assets are all underground. And that's kind of the distinction in my mind is what does it mean in terms of infrastructure development in contrast to your board's policy support.
Yeah.
You know, so it is relevant to policy support. It is relevant to interagency efforts.
Yeah.
But in terms of us having to commission studies on climate change to see how it's going to affect Oceano CSD's assets, I'm not seeing a lot of tie-in there.
Okay, just, yeah. And I was very impressed with the whole issue of climate change. All of the things that this brought up, I was not impressed with the counties. And I didn't read it word for word, but it just seems like a lot of money is being allocated to a variety of organizations. And if you read through it, at least some of the stuff I'm reading, it doesn't look like they're having very much success. It just looks like a lot of money. A tremendous amount of money has been, you know, countywide meetings that draw 11 people, two meetings, two different separate meetings, and they draw 11 total people. That's just, you know, I mean, it just seems like from what I've read and from my experience, all they're doing is meeting and talking. And that costs money when it's staff time. So, and maybe I'm terribly wrong, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody who wants to correct me. Thank you. Anything else?
I just wanted to add that I was really excited. I read the executive summary, and what I was excited about is what Oceano has taken steps already to do, what we've been talking about even this year when we went to the special districts association meeting of all board members, and I think we're taking so many steps to, you know, improve that transparency, that public engagement we've talked about. You know, the town hall meetings and, you know, the website, excited that, you know, that's getting closer. The sewer laterals, you know, we've already been working on that. And to President White's point, too, I thought when it comes to the climate change, I was thinking about this today, and also going back to, you know, the Zone 3 meetings and how, you know, looking at how bad the drought has been here, which is very much a part of climate change, and our conservation efforts and how, you know, we definitely, you know, the recommendation from Zone 3 was to the Board of Supervisors was to stay in the LRRP, you know, for a lot of reasons, needing to see, going back to even the GSI work in coming up in October, seeing the groundwater levels, seeing what the winter's going to be like. But I think from Oceano's perspective, you know, I know that our water resource portfolio is quite large for our community, and even from whatever that county report was a few months back about the, you know, over the next 10 years and population changes and everything. And, you know, as of right now, their, you know, forecast for Oceano maybe a few hundred over, you know, the next 3 to 5 years. But what we can do is, you know, conserve water. And I know that's coming up with later on with rates and you know, next month as well. But I think that's something that we can do because Lopez Lake might not be flush with water anytime soon. It may not be. But what we can do here is you know, manage our own resource, water resource, as well as we can. So anyway, those are just my thoughts.
Well, I think that, you know, Director Brunet and President White's comments both reflect some really good points that sort of aren't the focus of my attention, right? Because where is my attention tends to be what is the work that I need to get done, right? And what's going to be on the plate for the next 3 months or 6 months or 9 months or whatever. And your perspectives are really good from the standpoint of reflecting what we've already gotten done. I don't worry about climate change associated with the drought because we have a state water allocation, we have a Lopez allocation, and we've got, you know, groundwater pumping. We have a good diversified water portfolio. If I was working for one of our neighboring agencies or a couple of our neighbor agencies, my opinion would probably be, you know, 180 degrees different because they're not as well prepared for drier climates and more prolonged droughts and everything. So that's a little bit of good job Oceano because we've already addressed some issues that other agencies haven't addressed yet. And I'm sure the little Hoover Commission drew that point out because they probably see a lot of special districts throughout California who, you know, aren't looking far enough into the future as they should be. But, yeah, we're in good position on a lot of these points.
Except for the Five Cities Fire Authority. And that's mentioned in here in the report, and it's part of our responsibility, too.
On climate change?
Yeah.
Okay.
They were, there was a whole part here. It was very petite, the half of a page, on the concerns with California wildfires and the fact that they were quoting a fire chief from North Tahoe talking about their fire agency going to be bankrupt in 2 years without funds, and you're looking at North Tahoe, where there's trees and dieback and severe threats of wildland fire. And if your fire departments can't even keep the doors open from funding,
right.
And they looked at Proposition 13 specifically, and the two-thirds vote to get any special districts formed.
And the two-thirds vote to get special taxes approved.
Taxes
to
approved,
help.
I mean, that's what I meant.
Yeah. And so there continues to be some movement to try to reduce that supermajority. I think there's a lot of strong sentiment in California that special taxes still need a supermajority vote rather than a simple majority. But there's a lot of sentiment that the two-thirds voter approval is a really high bar to pass. In school districts, that two-thirds has been reduced. I think it's 55% right now. You know, especially on some vital services like fire, we'll see, but it would be nice to see that two-thirds requirement dropped somewhat. I understand the desire for people in general to make sure it's not just a simple majority, but the two-thirds, you have to get two people to vote yes for every one person who votes no, and so, you know, the yes votes only count half.
Yes, thank you. Anything else?
I have a question, I guess, yeah. Comment type thing. The fire department tends to respond to more helping seniors and that type of thing, not so much fires. I know I've listened to some of the calls, and I see repeated incidences at the same place, sometimes two or three times in one day, from you know elderly people that have trouble getting up and moving and that type of thing. I've thought about, is there any way that there should be another type of organization rather than the fire department having to respond to all these, you know, help me out of bed calls and things like that to kind of alleviate that? What concerns me is one of these days we're going to have another good fire and then they're going to have all these other calls coming in too. So I thought at one time they used to have something like that.
I can answer that generally. It's been looked at. It's kind of a little part of the five-year specific plan for the fire department, and it's going to be looked at because whether it's an ambulance service or a special response squad that would be out of it, because it's not just severe medical things, but it's
right.
The little things. When somebody's smoke alarm goes off at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's the fire department that comes puts a new battery in. I mean, you can often get a situation where the homeowners are terrified. The smoke alarm's going off. They can't find a fire. They don't know what to do, and the fire department responds. So it's a lot of miscellaneous calls as well as all the serious medical calls. And with modern CPR, it takes 5 people to continue the modern CPR from Oceano to French Hospital. They get you there, and you're still alive. They can probably save your life. But it takes 5 people to do the comprehensive modern CPR that they're doing.
That sure seems inefficient.
It's not inefficient. It's very efficient. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
It's extremely efficient, and they're actually saving more and more lives through that.
Yeah.
And not everybody that has a heart attack is 80, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of people are young, and they're going to have a full life if they can just get patched up. Yes, enough of this propaganda. Should we move on?
Yeah, that's fine.
9D, business item, informational workshop on post-drought reduction in water consumption rates with board direction for a hearing on October 11th, 2017. Mr. Ogren again.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board. So when your board acted in July, I believe, on rescinding actions associated with the drought resolution that had been adopted in 2014, the rate structure has this transition from drought rates to post-drought rates. And the drought rates were developed based on the target of 20% conservation. The community had actually been conserving at a higher rate of about 25% roughly. And in 2015-16, it resulted in a revenue shortfall of about $121,000. And then last year, it resulted in a revenue shortfall of about $80,000. And in both year, cost savings covered the revenue shortfalls. So we ended the year with good budget information, even though there was revenue shortfalls. The question is the timing of transitioning from the drought rates and the reductions to move to the post-drought rates. And so we ran some analysis, and basically if we were to make that 100% transition immediately, then July 2017, this last billing that we did, we would have had a $58,000 shortfall in just July, which would have extrapolated to a $310,000 shortfall for the entire year. So that's just simply saying that the community's consumption hasn't immediately come back up, and that's not surprising, that after droughts or after significant rate increases, it usually takes some time for consumption to come back up, and then even then, it often doesn't come up to pre-drought levels, that there's some sort of permanent conservation that's happened, and maybe it's a result of converting grass to, drought-tolerant landscaping. We also ran numbers to say, well, what happens if you went 50% of the way to the transition, and our simulated July 2017 billing would have been short $27,000, and on an annual basis, our revenue would have been projected revenue shortfall would be $146,000. Again, too significant to recommend at this time. Then we ran a 25% transition to post-drought charges. The July shortfall would have been $12,000, and the annual projected revenue shortfall would have been $65,000. And I'm sorry, this is page 64 of 88. Yeah, so.
Oh, it's right there in front of my nose.
Again, going 25% of the way there immediately, again, produced some revenue shortfall estimates that were greater than I really feel comfortable with. We ran, after producing the staff report, I ran some calculations on what if about a 10% transition. And those numbers, even though they would, you know, theoretically produce a revenue shortfall, I think are still within reason. And what we're going to have is before the next meeting, we're going to be running the September numbers. Based on the information in front of us now, I'd feel comfortable with, again, making 10% of the transition. That's not a 10% reduction in rates. That's a 10% transition from the existing rates to promote conservation to the post-drought rates. What that would mean on the tiers is about 11 cents per unit. And those units are being charged at anywhere from $3.25 to about $4.20. So a 10% transition right now knocks off some off of the bills, but it doesn't put us in a situation where we would have a super significant shortfall. The other thing that we have to, this is based on the July evaluation, and there's a little bit room to believe that it wouldn't be that worse because consumption is most likely still going to continue to trend up a little bit here. I'm not asking for any specific action to the board because I think that coming back at the next meeting with some updated information, what happened in September, you know, what are we seeing any trend lines that we might be able to rely on? And it's really hard because we've only had one billing period after exiting the drought. And so in that one billing part period, it's just one set of data, and it's hard to see any trends that the community is occurring in the community. I think a good approach to the ordinance is to basically have a twice-a-year semiannual review by your board. And that way, if we see consumption coming up more, then the ability to modify the rates is going to be better. Our goal, again, being revenue neutrality. As water consumption goes up, we can reduce the tiered rates and still meet our revenue target. That's the goal. Should mention that this has no effect on the base rates. It's only on the tiers. And it's only on the tiers because it's the tiers that promoted conservation. So at this point in time, it still needs to be monitor the situation, monitor how the community is changing their consumption habits, making recommendations to your board that don't place the district in a great level of risk. A little bit of risk on revenue shortfalls is to be expected because you never hit your revenue numbers anyhow. And the other thought is that typically in a budget, we'll have budget policy. So, for example, if we develop a budget policy that says we want to build a 5% contingency into the budgets every year, then we might take an approach where 3% of that contingency relates to expenditures in case we have unintended expenditures, and 2% of that contingencies is in the event that we have revenue shortfalls. So we're working with that concept a little bit. And certainly a transition, a 10% of the way transition to the post-drought rates would all be within a 2% of total revenues, and that's not an unreasonable. So I like the idea of being able to softly move into the post-drought rates, and I will, you know, want to provide some recommendations to your board at the next meeting. In order to adopt an ordinance on October 11th, we would need to introduce it at the next meeting. Granted, you can continue because ordinances require the two readings. The first meeting, your board has to basically have it on your agenda. You don't approve it, but we already have the public hearing scheduled for October 11th. I'm inclined to work with legal counsel to put together the ordinance that says initially maybe a 10% transition, but then a semi-annual review so that after the wintertime we see what happens, and if it's appropriate, make another rate modification in the spring. And then this time last in the fall of every year, we look at what happens in the summertime and make some potential rate modifications at that time. But the bottom line is we really have to watch what's happening with the community. I think that even a minor reduction, even the 10% transition, is a good message to the community, you know, because we do need to make that transition to post-drought rates. We just have to do it really carefully so that we don't find ourselves with any significant revenue shortfalls. On the graphs, there's a couple that are sort of noteworthy, and that is that in the graph that has the multi-years associated with it and not just July, what we see is that in last January of 2017, was the first billing period where our revenues actually exceeded our target. And then the rains happened. And so that January 2017 really covers mid-November to mid-January. And so all the way through November and into December, we were still in a drought environment, but consumption had increased a little bit. Then what happened is the rains came, and so we saw March and May go back where we had the revenue shortfalls. The most significant revenue shortfall was in the July billing period, right after the rate increase was adopted and right after the governor called for mandatory conservation on a statewide basis. And so that's not surprising, because everybody through California is hearing the same message. Conserve, conserve, conserve. The governor established mandates for the first time in California's history for statewide conservation requirements. And we at Oceano are saying, and we also implemented a rate increase, so our customers really sort of got that message, so double. And that shows up in the July only a little bit more clearly, where I match up 15 target versus 15 actual, and same for 2016 and 2017. And so it was 2015, right after the mandate, right after the rate increase, where we saw our largest revenue shortfall. In July of 2016, the revenue shortfall was not that significant. Granted, it's $15,000, but that's one of our bigger billing periods, so that's pretty darn close. And then actually in July of 2017, we exceeded the revenue target by about $4,000. And what that means is that in July of 2017, the community was right, almost right at that 20% conservation target. So they had been, the community had been conserving around 25% during the drought. Right now we're at a 20% conservation factor. So we are seeing consumption coming back up, and we might be just fine, but I think we need just more history before we do too much. And so that's where my inclination, subject to looking at what happens in the next billing, is to make a real soft approach in terms of transitioning from the drought rates to the post-drought rates.
Unfortunately, it seems to me that the 10% soft approach might be unrealistic.
You mean that would be too much of a rate decrease, or
too little?
Right. The consumption will probably continue to be lower than the 10% reduction indicated in the soft approach.
And it could be. Because we're going to be entering the winter months when consumption is already lower, you know, our risk in a dollar value losses or revenue shortfalls is lesser. When we look at it my recommendation would be that when we look at it in spring, then we're going to be facing the summer months, so we have to be definitely more conservative at that point in time.
The real tension is the citizens of Oceano have been very good in conserving water.
Yeah.
And we want to encourage that, and we want to sustain it, and that gives us the budget problem.
Yes.
Adjusting our prediction to all the way down to 10% as a transition might be unrealistic and conflict with our overall policy, where we want to encourage the conservation.
It's, I guess the counterpoint on that is that the community pays for a significant amount of water. And,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, and the consumption numbers are really pretty low already. They're paying for the water, and there's a little bit of, well, as long as we're within reason, why not utilize it? A relatively minor decrease, a consistent. Again, it's a 10% transition, which amounts to about 10 cents per unit of water compared to $3. There might be a little bit of a message to the community of good job with conserving. You now get the credit of a little bit of a rate decrease. But if we want them to keep at very low consumption numbers, it would require other actions in a Prop 218 by your board at some point in time. Because in 2015, when the rate increases were adopted, we were pretty much committed to once the drought is over, is adjusting the rates back and reducing them for a post-drought. The big question is and you're pointing it out, Director Colwell, is the community going to stay at 20% conservation, or are they going to go to some other number? And you know, time's going to tell. So,
will we even notice that it's been reduced?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's not going to be enough to, you know. Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, for at least a modest water user is not going to really notice that
the rates have gone down.
The rates have hardly gone down. Although certainly any, I mean, we made a deal, and anything is, yeah.
Yes, and I think that it's part of that public outreach, that it's the district's ability to do the rating decreases is dependent about what type of consumption is going on. And if the community simply stays at a lower consumption number and higher conservation, then we're going to have to come back and talk about what are we going to do about revenue shortfalls and how are we going to deal with the post-drought environment.
And that's probably where we're headed, even though we would like to encourage this rate of conservation or even continued increasing in conservation. It gives us a budget issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we structured the three-year phase-in with intent, with the idea being is, well, that three-year period then gives us the opportunity to monitor, you know, changes in communities' consumption and conservation, and to try to modify the rates to match with what the community is doing as best as possible. So my sort of inclination right now is that a 10% transition doesn't place the district at a great risk, but I still want to see September billings come in and see what happened over the last 2 months. And I'd bring that back at the next meeting on the 27th as well with some possible ordinances for your board to consider.
I think there's a whole... I think there are a whole lot of discussion points we could have surrounding this topic, just because, number one, too, I would love to see, I know the trend would be the same, obviously, but I'd love to see this in acre feet, like to see like what the actual usage was. I mean, this is in monetary.
Yes.
And again, the trend would be the same, but I would just love to see like, you know, the amounts, because I know Oceano has 1950 roughly, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Total acre foot, I think, when you combine all the water resources. Because that's the whole question, right, is, well, Oceano has this huge portfolio that unless we were just wasting water like crazy, we're never going to use, you know. And while it's great that we have that, and the trend right now in California has been droughts, and so we definitely want to see what happens this winter, I think the conservative approach in reducing, you know, the rates, at least that tier, downward just a little bit is good, because we still want to, I would think, we would still want to promote conservation because we have no idea what's going to happen. But at the same time, I kind of feel like, you know, we have this huge premium that Oceano has this huge premium that we pay for, that while having, I think, obviously an amount that's always set aside as an emergency, you know, on a yearly basis is great. We're stuck in this predicament of, as Director Colwell was saying, we have this budget issue where, well, we can't really reduce it that much and say we should continue conserving because that's not going to work, you know. But we also don't want to say, everybody, let's start using water like crazy, because then we can reduce water rates a little bit more.
So where do you find the balance?
Exactly. Yeah. There's a balance, I think, that we have to find.
And there's a real difficulty. If we have excess water, we can't raise revenue by selling some of that excess water. That's a very difficult proposition under all of the other regulations and all that we're operating within.
Yeah, that's right. From an idealistic standpoint, if we have excess water, we should be able to turn around and market it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we're not a wholesaler of a water supply. We're a retailer. And for the most part, if an agency needs to buy water, it's during the drought. It's not in a post-drought environment. So even at the state water subcontractors meeting today, there was a representative from Ag in North County who wants to buy some excess state water allocation. And if that could help with reduce some of our costs, then, you know, great. But it's easier said than done.
Exactly.
And so this balancing act is going to be important because we know that in Oceano, where some of the beautification, you know, is would be desirable, well, sometimes that requires watering and landscaping. And so how do you find that balance? And to Director Brunet's statement, so we are running the consumption numbers right now. Mm-hmm. For all the billing periods, that might be done. I haven't seen it, but it's certainly we're going to be providing the consumption data at the next board meeting on the 27th. And then but I wanted to start with revenues first because,
sure,
you know, yeah, that's super relevant to the budget. And then my other thought then in as we're discussing it, is how does our consumption then compare to other communities in our county? Because I know we're low. I know that Los Osos has absolutely done incredible conservation efforts. They have significant seawater intrusion. They have the entire community lives off the groundwater basin. They have no supplemental sources of water. They had no choice to go to some very draconian. So kind of pull them out of the equation. You've got North County, some of the communities where they're large lots in a hot North County environment, so their consumption numbers aren't really going to be comparable to Oceano. But we can look at some of our neighboring communities. We can look up at the Mesa. We can look at how much are they using on a per capita basis, and maybe that will help us then establish a goal for Oceano customers that then might translate into, you know, a revenue formula. I'm not going to be able to do the depth of analysis to come up with, you know, specific recommendations in the next couple of meetings relating to comparables with other communities, but we also know that this is going to be something we're going to have to be continuing to address. I like the idea of doing that twice a year review after the winter season and after the summer season, and we can certainly look at comparable communities as we proceed. But we'll have data, the consumption information at the next meeting. We'll have another billing period to evaluate to see whether or not, you know, 10% is doable or not. My judgment tells me I don't think there's a lot of risk with that one. But let's look at September's billing and see about that.
It's very difficult just to avoid the kick the can down the road syndrome. the way it's structured and the legitimate budget process. I mean, it'd be fantastic if we could lower the rates for our people and conserve at the same time. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
And I think additionally, too, going back that, you know, you're looking at the reductions and you're like, oh, well, you know, if we did 100% or 50%, budget's one thing, but you're like, for the community, that'd be great. But then we go through a dry winter. Well then what do we do?
Exactly.
You just snap it back again because, you know, you don't really want to do that either.
Right. You don't want to raise them.
No.
Right.
After you've just lowered.
Yeah. So.
And looking way down the road, build out may come quicker than some people think, too. I just point out that we got 2-4 residences and 1 business added to our water portfolio tonight. That's, I know that's nothing, but there's still, you know, we think going down the road we got a lot of water until the build out potential is still there. And it's not looking at multiple housing and looking at the, you know, the future, looking at some of our zones. Could use a lot of water. Anyway, but that's not this year, but maybe 5 years from now. Just in your answer, extra, extra, extra water. Yeah. Anything else? 9E, consideration of recommendation for approved write-off of utility bills and notices and notice in the Tribune and note this in the Tribune, unclaimed money, customer credits over 3 years old. Ms. Cassiola?
President White, members of the board, in item E, we have three different items to address regarding the district's accounts receivable. One is the write-off for the uncollectible service charges. Two is the write-off of ACH payments. And the third is the customer credits that the district still holds. So with the first item, it's the write-off of service charges. Every year, your board adopts a resolution, as you did in July, to collect on delinquent utility bills on customers' property taxes in accordance with Government Code Section 6115B. The customers are placed on property tax bills, and these are the customers that are still customers of OCSD. The customers we are referring to today are the ones that could not be placed on property tax bills because their properties were either sold and the current owners are not responsible for prior owners' delinquent accounts. To write off the remaining balances of the old customers requires board authorization. The attachment shows the accounts, and that is for a total of $9,324.62. The district could always pursue collection of these accounts with collection agencies, but for each year, the write-off amount is an insignificant amount. For example, as seen in Attachment A, for the 2016-17 fiscal year, the district didn't collect on $1,027, which is 0.04 of a percent of the district's $2.4 million dollars collected between water and sewer. For the upcoming years, the district plans on placing these items that are uncollectible with the same item that is brought to your board for tax roll, so they'd be done at the same time. Then the second item is to address the delinquent accounts that stem from ACH payments. The district offers the
Carrie?
Option.
Oops. Sorry. Maybe let's pause real quick since there's a couple of different components here. So to reemphasize what, you know, Carrie has said is that we've got about $9,000 worth of bills relating to property owners who have basically moved away. And how many fiscal years does that go back to?
2012 to now.
And so one of the good news about this type of action that's in front of your board is these write-offs should really happen every single year.
Yes, and this is like a one-time catch-up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to kind of emphasize that the $9,000 was not for last year, and Carrie mentioned it was like $1,200 just so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is a very good indication of sort of the turnaround that this district is having, right? Because we've addressed a lot of big issues, you know, the funding of the sheriff's station and some of those things that we had to catch up on. This is a good example of where we're really getting into the details now, and Carrie's recommendations that, look, we should just be doing this on an annual basis when we put items on the tax roll is really good. So I wanted to pause and see if your board had any questions with regard to that component real quick.
And then, as I understand it, back in 2012, we didn't have the policy of adding the delinquent billing to property tax.
That would have been about the time it started. Because
yeah.
We're seventh year now, or I can't remember, but it would have been around that time that we started putting it on the property taxes. Pretty close.
Oh, yeah, it's got to be close to that.
Yeah, because, I can't remember if this was the sixth year or, but it was around the sixth year. We identified it in the staff report in July, but I just don't remember what that number was, so. So then the corollary question is, you know, do we want to use a collection agency to try to chase them down? And the problem is the dollar amounts are so insignificant, it's going to be hard to find a collection agency who even wants to, you know, deal with such small dollar
amounts. Not going to happen, is it?
Yeah.
You're not going to get it.
And when we get 99.1 minus 4/10 of 1% or whatever. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
We need to get it off our paperwork.
Yes.
No recommendations to buy some headsets and us to start making some phone calls.
Oh, board, that's a, I didn't think about that, Director Brunet, but a working board.
Just kidding.
Oh, good. We can set up global calls.
All right. Thanks, Carrie.
Yeah. Okay, so the second item is for delinquent accounts that stem from ACH payments. So the district offers the option to automatically withdraw customers' bank accounts for the utility bills. Customers are able to fill out our auto pay application to do so, and they come in and send us a voided check and everything. So the notifications for drafts are either we get because they didn't have insufficient funds or they no longer have that bank account. And we run these through our RoboBank account. This means that the bank wasn't able to collect on these accounts that we received the notifications for, and these notifications were going to a prior employee's email. So we weren't notified that we weren't collecting these funds, but their accounts were marked as paid in our system. So in February of 17, the district identified this discrepancy, and we updated our bank notifications to come through both hard copies in the mail and timely emails to ensure that the district would be able to notify these customers and reach out to them and let them know that we weren't able to collect on their utility bills. So now the district is notifying them in a timely manner, and the ACH can then be addressed before any late fees come into play. So, but since these accounts back from 2016, these customers that are identified in Attachment A weren't noticed in a timely manner, the district is recommending a one-time write-off for these accounts, which have since been updated and fixed. But since they're from back in 2016, we're recommending writing them off and not hunting them down as well.
Are you saying 2016?
Yeah.
So, in effect, a year and a half.
Yeah.
Some of them about a year, because
it would be between
around July of 2016 to October of 2016, where essentially we just missed it because of the nature of how the email notifications were coming through. They just were going in, you know, staff person's email account who didn't work here anymore. Versus normal NSFs were coming through the mail. And so as Carrie mentioned, she fixed the procedural side of it, and it was fixed in February. But it's a little bit hard to go back to a customer, even if they're a current customer, and say, oh, you know, 9 months ago your check bounced, and so now we want to collect. We really feel like we're responsible for a timely notification. The bank, from the other side, the bank institution helped identify it as well, because there was one particular account where it had been closed, and so the bank notified us via this email that that account's closed. Well, we pushed the ACH through the next billing period too, and the bank, that second time, Rabobank notified us and said, wait, what's going on here? Because banking regulations, of course, if we submit false ACH requests to them, to the bank, you know, the bank has to come back at its clients and say, wait, what are you doing on your ACHs? So we had a customer that two ACHs in consecutive billing periods had been rejected, and that's then what prompted us and Carrie and Celia to say, okay, what's going on, and figure that out. So it was a combination of, you know, some of the customers who were going, what's going on, and then the safeguards within the financial institutions as well. So the overall, you know, duration was pretty limited. The dollar amount is pretty limited. We just, you know, are recommending to write them off because we don't think it's, you know, it's not the client's error. It was ultimately our error, and give the client and the customer the benefit of the doubt on them. And then the procedures that Carrie has implemented will help prevent it from happening again.
Just as clarification, The $9,000 figure mentioned earlier, is that the total of all of these categories, 1, 2, 3, or is that just category 1?
So that was the unpaid services charges over the, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So that one was from 2012 to now. So the items...
In all categories or just category 1?
Just category 1.
Okay.
Yeah, because these
so
eight...
So how much are we talking about in category 2?
Category 2 would be $996.70.
Okay, what's category 3?
That's category
3. This is actually good news.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so... The last item are customer credits or overpayments the district has on our accounts, but these accounts have been final or closed, so the customer is either left or not with us anymore. So these customers have overpaid their utility bills and have moved from the property, and the district does not have their forwarding address. These credits remain against our accounts receivable, and according to Government Code Section 5005-50053, which establishes the requirements for local agencies on unclaimed property, it states that if it's been over 3 years, the local agency must post a notice in the newspaper of general circulation for 1 week for 2 consecutive weeks. If the money is not claimed after 45 days of being noticed, the money can then become property of the districts.
How much is this total? 600?
So this one, the ones we would be able to notice is $566.45.
It'll pay for the advertising, barely.
Yeah. So we have recommended November 15th as the cutoff date for the district after we post, if this is so approved by the board. And it's illustrated in Attachment A, the accounts. And if there are any questions about that one.
I find it humorous. I'm sorry.
Well, I find that Carrie's detail to attention to be very stellar.
Oh, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It really is. And talk about a catch-22 that you've been trying to deal with and get straightened out from an accounting perspective. It's phenomenal. It really is. And we have to do it. And it doesn't make any economic sense, but...
Yeah. It requires board approval to write off, so
yeah.
I give it to you guys.
Well, I sure hope we approve that one.
And I think this is a big kudos to the administration. Yeah. You know, getting to this level of detail, like what you said, I think that's exactly what this is. This is getting into the nooks and crannies of the district and really cleaning everything up. And I think that's a testament to that. You know?
And these types of actions require board approval, and part of the reason why they require board approval is to make sure that, you know, staff doesn't give credits to friends and write off accounts receivables and stuff, just like we have payment of warrants coming on your board's agenda, although technically payment of warrants you could delegate to staff. Just on a small special district, it's not a good idea. The contrast, though, is that sometimes we have billing errors that I am authorized to credit. So if we have something that shows up and it's clearly a billing error, we will approve those. But write-offs of accounts that have already been billed does not follow under the category. But we did have a recent billing error, and I wanted to make sure to mention it to the board, and it wasn't our fault. So our program with the computer program, they did an update. And what this related to in the most recent billing period is the late notices that go out. So once somebody doesn't pay on time, it's a $5 charge. And then we send them out a late notice. And the late notice says, well, okay, now you have a new due date. Because if you don't pay by this due date, then you can get a door hanger. And if you get a door hanger, that's an additional, like, $25 charge. And then if you get your water shut off and it has to get turned back on, there's an additional $30 charge. So somebody who goes all the way gets a $5 charge, then a $25 charge, and then a $30 turn-on type of a charge.
So $60.
Yeah. So what happened is Tyler did an update, and When we went and plugged in the information like we normally do, the update said that their due date was the date after the door hanger date, essentially. It was the date that you would be shut off. And so what we're doing with Tyler, the computer company, is saying, hey, when you're doing updates, we really need to know when you're doing an update because it might affect our procedures. And so a number of clients came in, customers came in and said, look, your due date, this isn't the way that it's supposed to work. Your due date has always been the day before the door hangers would go out. And so we verified. And so that particular one, for we are reversing the charges because clearly, you know, that was an error in billing, and we're talking to Tyler. I think the total exposure there on door hanger fees is about $2,400 for that billing period. And it's kind of disappointing with Tyler. We don't think we really have any recourse against the computer company, but we're going to have discussions with them. But that's the type of thing that that door hanger fee or late fees, when they're clearly erroneously charged, then I can reverse them with the general manager authority. We just kind of want to bring it to your attention because, again, a couple of the customers who are very savvy and watch these dates very closely brought it to our attention. And what we will normally do in those situations when we think there's a billing error is to say, okay, we'll look into it. We tend not to give a quick reaction because we want to make sure to do our homework and figure out what went on. Again, so that doesn't require any board action, but I wanted to bring it to your attention as well. You know, but again, I like the recommendations for just incorporating these items at the same time we do tax roll every year, because if there's an unclaimed credit, and once 3 years passes, then we might as well do it, do the noticing, and get the accounts cleaned up. And yeah. Good job, Carrie.
Action.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the write-off of utility bills and notice in the Tribune the customer credits over 3 years old.
I'd second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Oh, I'm in charge here. Moving on. To hearing items, there is none. Receive written communications.
I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Future agenda items and future hearing items. We know that we're going to have water rates. That hearing item is October 11th. And what else is coming up?
On professional services proposals. My goal is to have the RFPs completed by the end of the month and out to the firms that we've shortlisted. I have to do some more grant compliance review before I can finish that up. And so hopefully it would be then basically October where we're getting the proposals in and come back to your board in November. The proposals I review with Director Angelo in Brunei on an ad hoc basis before coming back to your board. The district policies continued. One of the areas, treasurer policies, investment policies, I kind of alluded to earlier. We've been looking at those. But that work effort's going to pick back up in the near future. And mentioned that the emergency generator, I expect probably have recommendations on October 13th, pending the conclusion of the review by Gary Wilson, electrical engineer.
Okay, I had just one question. Do we have a new date on the bid opening for the 13th Street drainage? They said something about December or November.
So in speaking with Genaro Diaz at the county, their goal is to go out to bid in December.
Okay.
Which means that they would be awarding in around February, March. And again, to start construction as soon, you know, around April 15th, as soon as the rainy season is done as possible.
Okay, thank you. Just I'm assuming some other people are interested too.
Yeah, and that one is contingent. They're hopeful on getting additional grant revenues in addition to that $700,000 from CDBG that they got from themselves. I guess I've mentioned that enough times, huh?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, anything?
We adjourn.
A second.
So moved. We completed at 7:58.
Rounded.